Happy Sabbath, everyone. Good to see you in the place. Today, I'm going to be speaking on a topic that I think it's very important for us to present to our young adults, teens, and children. As they grow up and go into the workforce and into school, they will begin to get confronted by people who don't believe God is real. So today, I'm going to give a presentation about the logical existence of God. Now, I grew up in a Christian home with Christian family members, and even some of my distant family members, let's say uncles and aunts, who weren't religious by any means. They never doubted God. And it wasn't until I got into higher education, into science, that I was just making a random comment and someone confronted me and they said, "Wait, you believe God is real?" And it was just basically a fact to them that there was no God. So a couple of months ago, Aaron and I talked about the types of messages that we wanted to give to make sure that we speak to the young people, and I think this is a very important topic. I was in the process of writing this message when we visited a church, and one of my good friends gave a message that I thought was so great. I said, "Can I borrow that and take it back to my church?" And he said, and he let me see this. So I'd like to acknowledge my brother Randy Ashenbrenner for sending this to me. In the world filled with skepticism, science, and varying worldviews, it is important to discuss whether belief in God is reasonable and rational. For some, belief that that's not really a thing. There are many, many brilliant people who are so intelligent and can tell you a lot about everything. But when it comes to God, they don't believe that he's real. So some people believe that faith and reasoning are completely separate. But the Bible shows us that they're not only compatible, but they're deeply intertwined, like this. As Christians, we are called to love God with our whole heart, our mind, and soul. So we want to explore this topic from a biblical, scientific, and a philosophical standpoint. But before we do that, let's have some fun. I was going to add to these, but I said, no, these are good. About some scientific myths that almost everyone believes. Let's start with this one. You'll get cramps if you go swimming right after you eat. According to the Mayo Clinic, there is really no scientific basis for this. Really? How about this one? Everyone's heard the phrase, "You're as blind as a bat." But bats aren't blind. They actually see very well, and at night, they see better than we do. Bats do not have color receptors in their eyes, so in some lighting, it's difficult for them to see. Just as at night, it's difficult for us to distinguish colors. But bats don't need to use their eyesight because many of them can use echolocation to hunt the insects that they find. But they're fruit bats as well that don't hunt insects. They don't use echolocation. They just look at the fruit and they go find it. Here's a really, really good one. We have a variation of this rule at my house, and when you have lots of kids and maybe not enough food, this rule is used all the time. Who's heard of the 5-second rule? In our house, it's the 10-second rule. Everyone has heard of that. And in scientific terms, the 5-second rule suggests that if you quickly grab some food that fell on a floor or a contaminated surface, the microorganisms on that surface, the germs, will not have had time to transfer onto the food. You might be sad to learn that this is, in fact, a myth. Here's another one. Shaving your hair makes it grow back thicker. This will actually not change the thickness, color, or rate of growth. Now, it might feel more coarse or more stubbly for a time as it grows out. It may also appear to be darker and thicker, but it is not. And finally, who has heard this one? We all swallow up to 7 spiders in our sleep each year. The fact that people swallow up to 7 spiders in a year of their sleep is not valid. The science of it is that there are only 3 to 4 spider species that live in most American homes. They tend to be found either weaving their webs or hunting in areas where humans are not present. They wouldn't intentionally crawl into your bed because there is no prey. Spiders have no interest in humans, and they do their best to avoid us at all costs. Vibrations are known to warn spiders of imminent danger. With that said, a sleeping human is likely to be very terrifying to a spider. Besides, for those that are light sleepers, it is feasible to assume that they would also feel a spider crawling on their face. And unless someone is sleeping with their mouth open, a spider is unlikely to get in. Although it is possible that someone can swallow a spider, it would be an incredibly random event. Okay, so let's get back on topic. Is the existence of God logical? Before we dive into the question, it is important to clarify what we mean by logic. Logic is the study of reasoning, how we think, and the principles that guide correct reasoning. In a sense, logic is a framework that helps us understand truth, whether something makes sense or followed from evidence that is presented to us. So when we ask, is God's existence logical? We are asking whether it makes sense, given the evidence and our reasoning to believe in the reality of a divine creator. Now, I mentioned before, many of the smart people that I follow on many things are atheists. The first time I was confronted by atheists, it was someone that I thought was very intelligent and I respected. So a counterpoint to this message and someone who has a different perspective would be a well-known physicist and atheist, Stephen Hawking. He gives his thoughts on the Big Bang theory. He theorized that the Big Bang is the idea that the entire Earth began as a pinprick and has been expanding ever since. One of his famous quotes is, "Ordinary real time is replaced by imaginary time." In fact, honestly, that happens to me all the time. I imagine time has gone by at a certain pace only to discover I've been imagining things. So Dr. Hawking claiming that out of nothing, everything can come into physical existence, here's how he explains it. One can regard imaginary and real time as being the South Pole, which is a smooth point of space and time where the normal laws of physics hold. But there's nothing south of the South Pole, so therefore, nothing was around before the Big Bang. That's his argument. So by his definition, there's nothing in nothing. Therefore, nothing can create everything. Do you get that? There's nothing in nothing, so nothing can create everything. Because in nothing, there's not even rules. Right? So in a sense, anything can happen because there's nothing in nothing. Relying on an imaginary time as the cause of the universe is simply not true, despite Dr. Hawking trying to make his views sound like it has a real scientific basis. So let's go back to my question. Is God's existence logical? The first step in addressing this question is to look at the world around us. One of my favorite views, ever since I started attending this church when Abriana was a baby, is looking out that window during the various times of year. Every time I come here and I sit in my seat and I look through it, sometimes you see birds fly by. Sometimes we have the really big ones. I've seen deer a couple times. It's awesome. I remember one time there was that alert out that there were some bears roaming through a couple of miles north of here, and I was like, are we going to see one? But that's beautiful. The Bible teaches us that the created world, the things we see in themselves, are proof that God is real. In the book of Psalm chapter 19, the psalmist writes, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The sky proclaim the work of his hands." The beauty, the complexity, and the order of the universe point to a designer. The intricate design of life, the laws of nature, and the vast expanse of the cosmos suggest that there is purpose and intention behind it all. The world around us seems to speak of an intelligent and purposeful creator. Romans chapter 1 and verse 20 affirms this. It says, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power, and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse." So in his passage, Paul is telling us that even by creating things, God is telling us who he is. That this world around us, when we look out the window and we see that beautiful view, is a testimony to the power, the wisdom, and the divine nature of God. So that's our natural reasoning. But what about scientific reasoning? Because a lot of these scientists don't believe in God. As we explore scientific truths of the universe, we will see that they provide evidence that God's existence is not only logical, but also rational. One of the most undeniable arguments that science provides for the existence of God is that the fine-tuning of the universe. What is that? Well, when we look at the universe, we notice something remarkable. The physical constants and natures, they have a set of laws. And they're set in such a precise way that without them, life is not possible. Consider just a few examples. The force of gravity is precisely calibrated. The force of gravity. If it were slightly weaker or slightly stronger, stars would not be able to form properly. Planets would not be able to maintain stable orbits. If we didn't have the exact type of gravity that we had, the moon would not stay where it was. It literally float away. Or if it was stronger, it would come crashing down to Earth. How about this? The ratio of protons to neutrons. Do you remember that periodic table? If that was altered, chemical reactions would not take place. How about this? The electromagnetic force, which governs the interaction between the charged particles, they are all set to a precise value. And each atom has one. I want you to think about something as simple as water, right? It's most of our planet. And water exists because you have one atom, one oxygen atom, and it combines with two hydrogen atoms. That's it. The neutrons and the protons and the electrons, they exchange orbit, and they're bound, and voila, we have water. And if you heat it up, you can break that chemical reaction and cause them to separate. But guess what? These constants do not appear to be a result of random chance. In fact, the odds of these constants being set in such a precise way to allow life are so small that many physicists call it astonishing. Some even calculated the possibility of these constants lining up by chance, and the numbers are so staggering, it's inconceivable. Because we need all of them, right? We don't just need gravity, we need water. We need the sun to be rotating at a certain place. We need the moon to be in its place as well. Dr. John Polkinghorne, a physicist and a Christian theologian, once said, "The universe is not only stranger than we imagine, it is stranger than we can imagine." Do you understand that? Have you ever watched some of those nature videos? And some of those animals? I mean, some of them are uglier than anything you can imagine. Especially at the bottom of the sea. How does something like that evolve to live down there where there's no sunlight? And guess what? There are other things down there for it to eat. Or some of these animals that still live for hundreds of years. The logical conclusion that many scientists arrive at is that the universe must be designed, or at least fine-tuned, by some intelligent being. The precision with which these forces and constants are calibrated point to an intelligent designer who intended for the universe to sustain life, particularly life as we know it. This argument is often called the fine-tuning argument. It provides a rational basis for believing in God. The universe does not just happen to be the place where life exists. It appears to have been specifically designed with life in mind. And that's very important. Another logical argument for the existence of God is the cosmos argument. It addresses the question, why is there something rather than nothing? This argument can be summarized in 3 points. Everything that begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist, therefore it has a cause. The Bible supports this principle. In Genesis 1:1, we read, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." For centuries, many skeptics believed that the universe was eternal, with no beginning and no end. The universe had to have a beginning. Something had to come into existence. Before the beginning, there was no time, no space, no matter. There was nothing, and then suddenly, everything came into being. The famous physicist Albert Einstein once said, "The more I study science, the more I believe in God." The discovery that the universe began from a single point in time is entirely consistent with the biblical account of creation. The logical conclusion is that the universe had to have a cause. This raises an important philosophical question. Why did the universe begin? Why is there something rather than nothing? The fact that the universe began is not theoretical or philosophical. It's a scientific fact. Observations of distant galaxies and cosmic microwave background radiation and the redshift light from galaxies all point to the conclusion that the universe had a definite starting point. Now, logically speaking, anything that begins to exist must have a cause. It is illogical to think that something could come into existence from nothing without any cause. The fact that the universe began implies that there was some cause, some reason for it to begin. And since the universe includes everything, time, space, and matter, the cause must be something that exists outside of time, space, and matter. This is where many scientists and philosophers have concluded that the cause of the universe must be a transcendent, eternal being, one who is outside the confines of our universe. This is where the logical argument for God's existence comes in. The beginning of the universe points to the necessity of a first cause, something that caused the universe to come into existence, something that itself is not caused by anything else. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 3, the Bible says, "By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible." So that's exactly what the Bible says. How did all of this get here? Well, God said so. That seems simplistic. Let's consider the laws of nature. One of the most fascinating discoveries of science is that the universe operates according to laws. Laws that govern everything from the motion of planets to the behavior of subatomic particles. The law of gravity keeps our feet planted on the ground and governs the orbits of planets. The law of thermodynamics governs energy and heat exchange, providing a consistent way that energy behaves in the universe. The laws of motion govern how motions move through space and time. These laws aren't random. They're consistent, they're predictable, and they're universal. The fact that the universe operates according to a set of laws that we can understand and predict itself is a remarkable phenomenon. But they also raise a logical question. Where did these laws come from? Why do they exist? The answer from a scientific perspective is that the laws of nature are not random. They are consistent because they were established by an intelligent being. The way I like to say it is you can't have law without a lawgiver. In other words, the very order and structure of the universe implies that there is a lawgiver who established these laws. The rational order we observe in the universe suggests that it is not a product of mere chance, but by design. In Isaiah chapter 40, verse 26, Isaiah writes, "Lift up your eye and look at the heavens. Who created all these things? He who brings out the starry hosts one by one and calls for each of them by name. Because of his great power, mighty strength, not one of them are missing." This concept of a rational, law-giving creator is supported not only by theology, but by science itself. Science have long recognized that the universe is orderly and consistent. The fact that we can make predictions based on the laws of physics, whether we are launching a rocket into space or calculating the movement of particles in a laboratory, shows that these laws are reliable and stable. This stability points to the existence of the mind behind the laws, someone who designed them to function in an orderly way. What about the origin of life? Life, especially at the cellular and molecular level, is incredibly complex. DNA, The molecule that contains the genetic instructions for building and maintaining life is an astounding example of complex information. Today in church, you know, when your kids ask you some of those questions that stomp you, like even when they're little, my kids have had the ability to do that. They ask me questions that are incredibly difficult. So today we're driving to church, and Haven asked me. Haven says, "Dad?" I said, "Yes." She says, "Well, what do coral eat?" I said, "Coral? You know, in the ocean? What do coral eat?" "Well," I said, "they eat very tiny plants and animals that you can't see." She said, "Well, I don't see a mouth on coral." What do they eat? But that's life at the cellular and molecular level. But there's DNA even in something that tiny. DNA contains an enormous amount of information. There are 28 grams in an ounce. So just 1 gram of DNA can store more information than the entire Library of Congress. The structure of DNA is highly organized, with sequences of nucleotides that encode instructions for every living organism. This complexity raises a logical question. Where did this information come from? Information is not something that arises from randomness. It is always a product of an intelligent mind. When we encounter complex information in the form of books, software, or blueprints, we understand that it was created by an intelligent being. Why would it be any different for the information encoded in DNA? In Psalm chapter 139, 13, and 14, the psalmist says, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb, and I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made." The complexity of life at the molecular level is simply too intricate to be the result of a random process. It suggests a purposeful design with an extraordinary level of complexity. Another question to consider is, where did the existence of moral values come from? C.S. Lewis, in his famous work, Mere Christianity, argues that the presence of objective moral values, that is, values that apply universally to all people, regardless of culture or time, points to a moral lawgiver. The Bible supports this as well. In Romans chapter 2, 14 and 15, Paul writes, "Indeed, when the Gentiles, who do not have the law, do by nature the things required by the law, they are a law for themselves. Even though they do not have the law, they show that the requirements of the law are written on their hearts and their consciences, also bearing witness." The fact that all human beings have an innate sense of right and wrong suggests that these moral laws are simply not social constructs or personal preferences, but are a reflection of a higher moral standards. Where do these laws come from? Next, we come into what's called the anthropophagic principle, which suggests that the universe is fine-tuned for life. The universe seems perfectly suited for the emergence of life, from the specific properties of water or to the position of Earth in the Goldilocks zone. They called it the Goldilocks zone because if it was a little this way, it'd be too hot. If it was a little that way, it'd be too cold. So we're right in the Goldilocks zone. It's just right. All these factors come together to make life possible. It is not by chance. It suggests that the universe was designed with life in mind. In Acts chapter 17, 26 and 27, Paul tells the people of Athens, "From one man he made all the nations, that they should inhabit the whole earth. and he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him, though he is not far from any one of us. Finally, God has not only revealed himself through nature and philosophy, but he has made himself known through personal revelation. In John 14, verse 9, Jesus says, "Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father." Jesus Christ provides, declares the most personal way that we can know God, through his death, his life, and his resurrection. It provides not only a logical basis for faith, but also a personal relationship, an emotional connection. So in conclusion, those scientific discoveries that talk about fine-tuning the universe and the laws that we see, the physical laws, we can see a picture emerging. That when we look out this window that I love to do so much, that didn't just happen by accident. When we look at the beauty of this earth and how things fit together, the animals, it wasn't just a random big bang. It was intentional. God spoke these things into existence. And the more and more we learn about the world, we understand more and more how finely tuned it is, how purposeful it is, and how intricate it is. This understanding leads us to a rational conclusion: the existence of our Creator. So, going back to that science lab at the University of Michigan, all the people that I was exposed to in my life, again, even the ones who didn't go to church, who wouldn't be considered godly, they all believed in God. Everyone. They believed in God, everyone in my family. No one doubted that he was real. Even if they didn't listen to him. They knew he was real. But now that we have our young people going into schools, universities, the workforce, you're going to run into people who are atheists. They don't believe God is real. And some of those people are going to be very intelligent in many other ways. Many other ways. Even though I question that because my Bible tells me that the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. And I believe that. But they will be successful, wealthy, and have all these benchmarks. And they'll say, God isn't real. And you've only been to church and we talk about God as it's a fact. But I want you to realize that it's not just the Bible, even though that's what we focus on. The Bible has told us that we can look around at the things that are made and they point to a creator. We can look at the laws that are here and see it points to a lawgiver. And we can even use science to explain where these things came from. Because the Big Bang, and they still call it a Big Bang theory, because there are so many things that they can't explain when it comes to that. So this understanding leads us to a rational conclusion, and that's the existence of God. God's existence is not just a matter of faith. Even though for me, we have all that evidence, for me, it's still a primary exercise in faith. Because there's a lot I don't understand. But I also want everyone to know that's not all we have to rely on. God's existence beyond faith is also reasonable. It's very reasonable. It's not someone who is superstitious or backwards or uneducated. It's very reasonable. And it's logical when it's drawn from the scientific evidence around us. So I hope this message serves you well in this climate today where people don't believe in God. And I want our young people to be equipped to talk about God's existence being real to anyone, whether they grew up in the faith or whether they were, you know, brainwashed with the science that says, you know, God isn't real, this is superstitious, we came from monkeys, etc. So I hope this was a benefit to you. And if you'd like a copy of this, I can send it to you.